We'll take a run through some of the Bible passages that pertain to your spiritual self. And we'll start with John 10:30. I and the Father are one. God is spirit. You can only be one with spirit by being spirit. God is not flesh and blood. But God and I are one. Therefore, the high vision is that I am not flesh and blood. The mind will not assimilate this. The misperceiving mind will not accept this. Only in the depth of your soul will you know this to be true. So you must live there. That must be your habitation. There you will discover that I and the Father are one spirit. And as the Father is not flesh and blood, neither am I. God is life, and his life is the light of all men. I and the Father are one. I am life. I am light. All that the Father is, I must be, because I and the Father are one. And all that denies it must be misperception, not to be accepted. That is the importance of I and the Father are one. It is the authority that the I of you and the Father are one and the same. And it is the I which makes this declaration. The I of you and the Father are one and the same. Permit any form of error to creep into your belief as a possibility, and you are driving a wedge between the reality of yourself and the supposed self that you are. And then you walk out as a dream, as a mortal myth. And you can spend the next 50 years living that way, wondering why God isn't the light of your life. It matters not what mortal does to you. It cannot do anything to the reality of your being. Your life does not depend on your body. Your life does not depend on any body, on any condition. Your life does not depend on a single thing in this entire world. Your life is independent of this world. And you have to live with that in consciousness until it seeps through into your everyday knowing that my life is independent of this world. It doesn't depend on my heartbeat. It doesn't depend upon my weight or lack of weight. It doesn't depend upon my brain cells. My life is completely independent of this which is called my physical being. And as long as I live in the knowledge that I am that life, it will appear as the regulating, governing self for that which the world sees as my physical being. As long as my consciousness is living in the knowledge of that life, is linked up with the reality of me, so that I am not separate in my belief, not apart, not living a second life, a life in the shadow. I and the Father are one, never divided. And because the Father is perfection, you are never separate from perfection. It is impossible. You may think you are, but that is misperception. You cannot be separated from perfection in all things. You cannot be separated from grace. It is impossible. You cannot be separated from love. Why? Because I and the Father are one. Not two. The Father is love. How can I be separated if we're one? The Father is perfection. I cannot be separated from that which I am one with. That is the fact. It doesn't change. Everything that denies it is misperception. Therefore, when you learn the fact and live with the fact and reject that which denies the fact, that perfection which you accept to be your divine heritage, that love, that abundance, that perfect, ever-present self which cannot be separated from itself is you. All that can stray from it is world hypnosis, and you're accepting world hypnosis. There can never be an error in your being. You're never guilty of error. You're never guilty of an evil thought. You're never guilty of an evil scheme. You're never guilty of condemnation. You're guilty of no thing on this earth. The misperceiving mind, which creates a sense of a second self, is merely fooling the one who accepts themselves as guilty. They have not accepted that I can never be separate from that spirit which the world calls God. We are pure, but we have to be what we are. One. In John 12:45, he that seeth me seeth him that sent me. That is the statement, then, that you are saying when you know that God is spirit, and whoever sees you, no matter what they think they're seeing, you are spirit. He that seeth me is seeing the spirit, which is one with the spirit that sent me, for they're one and the same. You're looking at the spirit of God. Whoever sees you is seeing through a veil, because they cannot see the spirit of God that you are. And this is the statement here. This is your identity. And you must let this be the identity of all that you see. Whoever you see, you're seeing him that sent that individual. Where are you looking? You're looking at one who is one with the Father. It doesn't matter if they know it. You're the illumined one. You are looking at one who is one with the Father. That one is the Spirit of God. You are looking at the Spirit of God. You are the Spirit of God. You are looking at yourself. Always, you are looking at yourself everywhere, and yourself is looking at you. As you live with this, it opens up. The invisible, infinite one is the ever-present, invisible perfection of the universe. God is the kingdom of God. The self of you is the kingdom of God. The perfect law of your being never stops being what it is. And again in John, John 16, 12. I didn't intend for that one. I have many things to say unto you, but you cannot bear them now. Well, I think we're saying them. This is the one, 16:28. I, and this is the I of your being, I came forth from the Father, and am come into the world again. I leave the world and go to the Father. This is the truth of your being. You are formed of the Father. You return to the Father. How do you do that? Because I and the Father are one. Always, there is no you except the one who is one with the Father. This is not going to return to the Father. But I am. The you that is returning to the Father is the Spirit of the Father, and it is here now. It came forth from the Father. It returns from the Father. When is it separate from the Father? I am always one with the Father. I am always the perfect self. I will never permit a human sense of things to fool me with its misperceptions. This is what you're dwelling with until you're ready to move into that incorporeal life, right here, right now. Let's go to 2 Corinthians 5:1. About our invisible body. But we know that if our earthly house of this tabernacle were dissolved, if our physical form, our earthly house of this tabernacle were dissolved, right now, not if we die, but right now, if we knew the truth about this earthly form, if this house of this tabernacle were dissolved in our consciousness, we have a building of God. What is that building? Our spiritual self, isn't it? And it's here. We have a building of God and house not made with hands, not formed in the womb, not humanly created, but eternal in the heavens. We're becoming aware now that within what appears to be the first born, there is the second born. And we never were the first, we're always the second. It's only the misperceiving mind which thinks of ourselves in terms of flesh and blood. That invisible house, not made with hands, I am. I come forth from the Father. I return to the Father. I and the Father are one. Now, since before the world was, and forever, I, the invisible house that is one with the Father, can never leave you. We are one and the same. Let's go to 2 Corinthians 6:1. Make that 6:16. Ye are the temple of the living God. For God has said, I will dwell in them and walk in them. I will be their God. The Spirit of God is your temple. Now, all of the errors of this world are denying what we are reading in the Bible. Every sense misperception denies this. But this is the fact. And the sense misception is the concept of world hypnotism. 2 Corinthians 5:16. Wherefore, henceforth, know we no man after the flesh. Yea, though we have known Christ after the flesh. Oh, how beautiful. We have known Christ after the flesh. We're looking at Christ and calling it the flesh. We have said, Mother, you are my mother in the flesh, but it isn't. We have known Christ after the flesh. We have thought of ourselves after the flesh. We have judged, but we have misjudged. What is righteous judgment then? Not to know after the flesh, but to know the Christ. Yet now henceforth know we him no more as flesh. We know his reality. He is the Spirit, the temple of the living God, one with the Father. In Matthew 6:25, take no thought for your body. Take no thought for your life. Why? Your life is the Spirit of God. Your body is the Spirit of God. Stop misperceiving your spiritual body as a human physical form. Take no thought. Stop misperceiving. Accept what you are. Ephesians 4:22. That ye put off concerning the former conversation the old man, which is corrupt according to the deceitful lusts, be renewed in the spirit of your mind, that ye put on the new man, which after God is created in righteousness and true holiness, the old man and the new man. The body of flesh that we thought we were through the perception of the mind. The new man, the spirit that we always were, one with the Father. A readjustment in consciousness. A rebirth in consciousness. An acceptance of no error. And of no form which is capable of error. An acceptance of incorporeality. It goes on, it goes on, it goes on. John, 1 John 1, 4:4. Always the same message. This will be I in the midst is greater than he that walks in the world. Ye are of God, little children, and have overcome them, because greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. The incorporeal self is your reality. Spiritual temple. The spiritual substance, the spiritual life, God itself. Always these phrases are reminding us that all error is a lie. Nothing changes the ever-present perfection of God where you stand. Now, God isn't sick. God never had an accident. God isn't unhealthy. God isn't poor. God isn't going to die. God isn't suffering. And I and the Father are one. We have to learn to accept that. We have to learn to dwell in the truth of that so the lie comes up against a stone wall. The single I is single to God. It accepts that I am that invisible, incorporeal spirit. I am the spiritual temple of God. I don't know anyone who isn't. We are all that one. And that is a single I. Not divided, not dual. Not accepting God as something and error as something else. But accepting God as all. And error as impossible. It doesn't change anything. It only changes another lie. Error changes the lie to another lie. But if you're in the truth, you can let the lies change all they want. They do not change in your consciousness. And you really take no thought for your spiritual body because it is God. You have no other. You put off the old man, you discard which is not that which is not you. We're going to come back to some of the statements from Joel's book, which we've been discussing here. But all of this reasoning and mentalizing and recalling truth and being alert becomes more like a reflex action if you're practicing certain spiritual exercises, so that you don't have to stop and find chapter 6 on line 28 and what did it say and how will I remember that. Why don't you just get out of that body a little every day? Every day. Give yourself a 10-minute holiday from the body. You'll see what I mean. When you are willing to accept incorporeality for 10 minutes, you will do more in those 10 minutes than you will do with a library of books. Because everything that you will have read and will have heard happens to be already finished. And then you come to the experience of it instead of the mouthing about it. Well, let's do it now and see what I mean. It's going to be strange for some of you. But I accept that you have no physical body for a moment. There's no place you can find a physical form. Now, you know that in the form you have vision, you can see 100 yards away. Well, maybe all of that 100 yards isn't your vision from over here to over there. Maybe the whole 100 yards is your vision. Maybe all of that distance is actually your vision, seeing every inch of the way right from where the place itself is. So that it's all your vision. 100 yards of vision, all alive with vision. The very vision you have here, you have over there. If you knew you were there. Every quality you have over here, you have over there, and all along the way. Why? Because God over here isn't any different than God over there. God's vision doesn't stop where your body does. God's vision is there and there. But I and the Father are one. My vision is everywhere. Now, if I become conscious of myself where I am, I will have vision everywhere. If I become conscious of myself everywhere that I am, I will have qualities everywhere. Someday you'll find that this is already the truth. And you'll go traipsing around, out of body, happily enjoying your freedom everywhere. Why not? I and the Father are one. Start living that way for 10 minutes a day and see what I mean. Don't be afraid to take a few steps in your mind. You'll find it's easy without a body. Don't be afraid of the impossibilities that suggest themselves to a human mind. You don't have one. Begin to feel the freedom of being. Try to get a feel of your incorporeal self. Try to learn that your life is everywhere. No matter where you go, it's going to be. There are no barriers. There are no walls to your incorporeal self. There are no densities. There's nothing you can sink in. Every place is spirit, and it's a matter of picking up consciousness everywhere. but letting the consciousness do it so that you rest in the knowledge of an invisible, incorporeal self which is everywhere. And then let the spirit do what it wishes as you drop all human mental concept. You may only get a tinge at first, or a beginning, or it may happen in a dream. But plant the seed that there is no place where you are limited or forbidden to be. For you are an everywhere self. And as you can, let your consciousness of that begin to take over, it will show you your everywhere self in many ways. 10 minutes a day. Don't mind the struggle. After a while, it begins to do things by itself. You may even be shocked to discover you really are an incorporeal being. You never had a corporeal body. You don't have an incorporeal and a corporeal. You have an incorporeal body misperceived and appearing as only to the world sense. This is the freedom that we will learn to live in increased measure. That's why we have to go through all of the bread and butter course of impersonalizing error. To get out of that form which we're not in. I am the father of one. I come from the Father. I go to the Father. Thou seest me, thou seest the Father. Oh, he said it in 95 different ways, every way except straight out. You're not there in a physical form. They had to speak of earthly tabernacles instead of human bodies. They were speaking to an enslaved mind. It would have been happy just to get a third meal a day. We have our third meal. We also have the horrors that appear in the world. We have God shaking the world. We have ministers who think God is bringing evil to earth. We impersonalize all this. And we live in the one infinite incorporeal spiritual self. Free from concept, 10 minutes a day, letting the I that is infinite take you on a guided tour of the many mansions within. Give yourself that luxury until you feel rather unhappy when you're not in that awareness of the incorporeal self. When you come out of it and go through this world, you find you hunger to return, to be still, to know the glory of the invisible self, the reality of being. I wanted us to have a taste of this today because Spirit makes these demands upon you, and when Spirit does, you comply. And also to know that impersonalizing error, although it's quite a drudgery at times, is a vital thing. It's the way you come out of the prison of world hypnotism, of world karma. You see, we're not suffering just from mind. We're suffering from world karma. But there isn't any. The whole suffering is hypnosis. There's only God. Where's world karma? Just a false belief that everyone accepts. Just the invisible static all around us. multiplying itself through those who are unprotected and innocent of it. Even good people, even holy people, even those who think they're living spiritually, even great religious leaders, all taken in by world static, denying the allness of God's presence, the allness of the spiritual universe, the allness of the incorporeal self, accepting duality, accepting good and evil, still living in the Garden of Eden and thinking that they have fallen. But we are awakening from the sleep, and Christ is giving us light. Now, I hope this exercise is clear to you, because when you are able to do it for a little bit, it doesn't matter if you have any great sensation or not, there will be a deepening of the peace. There will be a feeling that I almost made it that time. There'll be a feeling that this is the direction I'm going to travel a little more. And you'll come out of it looking at the world and saying, well, you don't scare me a bit. You don't fool me. I somehow am developing that consciousness of the invisible self behind this visible world, and a freedom in it, an awareness of it. And as you do, this world won't terrorize you. Its evils won't penetrate your mind into the acceptance of them. You look at your own form and say, well, if they hand me my head on a platter, it's not going to change a thing. We're learning to lose all of the concepts which have denied our own being and the presence of God as ever perfect everywhere, undivided. We're coming out of hypnosis. Remember now, the only thing that we suffer from, either individually or collectively, is hypnosis. There is no error except hypnosis. There is no condition. There is no physicality. There is no matter. There is no world. There is God. There is the universe that God is. There is the kingdom. There is the divine self. There is the Christ. There is I. Infinite, eternal, immortal, ever present, ever perfect, ever wondrous as the Father. Now in Joel's chapter, rather late I guess, when Jesus turned on the devil in the temptations, there was no devil there. It was just a temptation in his mind. You knew that, of course. There was no devil, there was just a temptation in his mind. Fine. And it had to be met in his mind. So, there is no evil person confronting you. There's no evil condition confronting you. This is a personalization of the impersonal carnal mind. It isn't the belief of your mind. That's the point. It is the universal belief in two powers. And as you recognize this and impersonalize it, the evil falls away from the person. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, depending upon his powers or degree of receptivity. It's hard to impersonalize because these images of persons are so deeply implanted And so you have to dwell in that invisible self for quite a while before it's very real to you. And then the bubbles of persons do not bewitch you into accepting them as real. There is no evil condition confronting you. If you want to reread that again, probably on page 76 in Mystical Eye. What determines the harmony of our experience is our reaction to these things. Not hiding, not claiming they do not exist, but recognizing that they're only power to a world that believes in good and evil, not to me. I know that there is but one power. That means no other power is possible. Now, when we say that there's only one power, there aren't two powers. There aren't the powers of good and the powers of evil. That means that the power of perfection can never be changed. It doesn't make any difference if the whole side of the mountain falls down. You must stand in the knowledge that there wasn't a mountain there in the first place. Only God was there, and God is still there. All that has happened is one dream in world hypnosis of a mountain has now changed to a fallen mountain. All that is there is God everywhere. That's your universe. And so the change from one illusion to another doesn't shake you up. For you, it will be a harmonious change. Because you know the reality of it before the change. God didn't create an earth and then shake it up. God's earth is perfect. It doesn't need any shaking. It is perfect now. All it will shake is the illusion in men's minds. And if we shake with it, we have not found that I and the Father are one. We are prepared for the voice. I think that's the eighth chapter, the voice. We're in the eighth chapter already, next week. I speaks. We should be able, if we're practicing the incorporeal self 10 minutes a day, to come to a place where the incorporeal self hears God speak. That's the level at which I speak. And so in a sense you're preparing for that chapter and for that experience, and you're inviting that experience as a permanent dispensation. I don't want to weary you. I have so many more things to do. But we'll just rest now, unless you can tell me what time it is.
4 o'clock.
Well, I guess we will rest now. And let's close with a meditation, reviewing incorporeality as without boundaries, not finite, not weight, not density, just a quiet knowledge that I am life, without boundaries. You can't take my life and crowd it into a little form. You can't put a package around it. It's free life. It's divine life. It's so constituted that it is absolutely and totally perfect life. So perfect that it maintains that perfection forever. It is eternal life. It is radiant life. It is all-knowing, all-power, all-glory, all-truth, all-love, and it is everywhere. It is forever without error. Thanks again.